Hi there, listener. It's Matthew. You've come looking for an episode of the Children's Book Podcast, and you've found it. Hooray! But you're probably wondering why the name of the podcast has changed. After 8 years of doing the Children's Book Podcast, I began a new career as head of podcasts at A Kids Company About, where I now oversee a podcast network dedicated to producing original content that talks up to kids, centers the things going on in their world, and engages and challenges how they see the world and themselves. All of the episodes of the Children's Book Podcast are still here, but now, if you're subscribed, you'll get new episodes of Worth Noting, a kids podcast about current events, hosted by me. Something for you and the young people in your life to enjoy together. Enjoy this episode, and I hope you'll check out Worth Noting and other podcasts from A Kids Company About. Meet Mike Wu, and hear the music, see the beauty. Welcome to All the Wonders, the Children's Book Podcast. I'm Matthew Winner. This is episode number 374 of the podcast with Mike Wu. Mike's memorable elephant, Ellie, returns this year in Ellie in Concert, a story about helping a friend and hearing the way things can come together. Mike's an animator, and as I've often commented to other animators who make picture books, it shows. The way Mike depicts form and movement is music in itself, but there's actually a bit of original music that was composed to accompany this story. I'll play us into the conversation with a bit of the first piece, and then stick around at the end of the interview to hear the full performance of Ellie in Concert. And no worries, the piece is available for download with some other music on Mike's website, so you'll be able to share them with lots and lots of readers. Enjoy the listen. Here's episode number 374 of the podcast with Mike Wu. Welcome to the podcast, Mike Wu. I'm glad to be inviting you here tonight.
It's great to be here. Thanks for having me, Matthew. A big fan of your website, all the great books and just insight on all things books and outside, just creative expressions and, you know, different medias, and it's really charming. So congrats on that.
Oh, you, sir, are very kind. I appreciate that very much. Mike, I know your work from Ellie, from a year or two ago when Ellie came out, a book that gets loved a lot in our library. But I was so pleased to see that a second book was coming out. And that's why we're here talking tonight, for Ellie, yeah. Ellie in Concert. So before we jump in, before I jump in and start fanboying all over the place, why don't I just give you an opportunity to share with the people listening the story of Ellie in Concert.
Well, first off, I'll introduce Ellie to those that don't know her. The book published in May 2015, the first Ellie. And Ellie is a character very dear to my heart, in a sense that I think she represents a lot of us that are trying to fit in and trying to find that way that we can contribute, or that special talent that we have that we maybe don't know exists. So we're trying to, you know, we're searching for. So that was kind of the theme of that first Ellie book. And, started to explore and get deeper about that character. fortunately, Disney Hyperion wanted to do another book. So, and my big vision for Ellie was just that she is kind of a champion of the arts. So the first one explored like visual media or painting, which is a universal language for kids. And you really want to make sure you relate to kids. And then I wanted to do something that had musicality in it, or just music as a theme. And that was the seed for Ellie in Concert.
I think that to have a picture book so beautifully reflect composition, reflect the way that music is assembled and orchestrated, this was something that, I should tell you this, Mike, I should concede that my wife is a general music teacher in an elementary school. Mm. And so this one in particular, when we read it at night, there's a number of books that will have a character whistling with musical annotation above their head, or we'll have that. And Amy always like whistles whatever they're humming, trying to figure uh-huh. out to see like, wait, do they just throw notes onto a page or does this mean something? But you, so story time in the Winter household, we're all huddled around in bed. We read these books, right? And we read this book and it was beautiful. And Amy, right from opening the book, saw Betty's theme and was trying to whistle that. And went through the story. Betty, I should say, is this a bird in the story that Ellie finds in trying to help her friend Lucy sleep. But going through the book and having it be what it is, and then finding that there's this entire original, gorgeous composition inside the jacket, mm-hmm. which... of course you did, but again, so lovingly you've provided recordings of performances of both Betty's song and of Ellie in Concert on your site. And so I was telling Marianne, I was telling the publicist from Disney Hyperion this week, as I was getting ready to talk to you, that Amy has been teaching your book for the past week in her elementary school.
My gosh.
She's been teaching it. Yeah.
That's so exciting. Well, thank Amy for me, first of all. I'm so glad, not everyone can read music. And personally, I'll confess, I can't read music. I had to kind of learn about the notes and how they're placed. And in a sense, like kind of like how to write a sentence out
yes.
with letters, because it's like, that's how I describe when I open the book and the first end page spread. Are music sheets, and I kind of talk about it in that way, that in a book, you're reading words in a sentence, and these are words for music, basically. And I don't get into it too much, because I have to get into the book, but I wanted to celebrate that. I remember my sister actually played piano, took a lot of lessons, and she played actually very well. It was unfortunate she kind of stopped, but I remember having, these must have been from the 60s or 70s, but they're old music sheets, like Disney songs.
Yeah.
And they would have the characters, because they're
yes.
for kids. Have the characters kind of like dancing around on a page, or at least one little spread before, on the title page of that particular song. And I just thought it was so charming, So I kind of, that was the feeling I was going for those end pages and also the back jacket.
Yeah. I mean, I think we have the collection of all of that you're talking about. We have the Disney songbook at home, and it's an old copy that might have mm-hmm. even been from Amy growing up that she still uses to play around the house and to play with her piano students. But you're, all of those notes that you're hitting, all those notes, sorry, that was an unintended pun. Sorry.
no, I love it.
No, but to have the end papers as you do with not just the music written out for Betty's theme, but also, like you're saying, to have the characters standing on the staff or hanging off of some of the staffing there is, mm-hmm. it feels, immediately as you're saying it, feels just like those songbooks. You're hitting an age here. As she's reading to her students who are kindergarten through fifth, she's reading it to all of them and talking about different aspects in all of them. In particular, when she's talking to the older kids, I was asking her about it. She's actually looking at how, listening to Betty's theme, and then hearing it incorporated into the larger piece, and just hearing those compositions work together. I don't know that those, the thought that you had in not only writing Ellie in concert, but then to bring Andrew, to bring your composer into it, to have that aspect that feels like it has to be there, is something that I really respected in you, because as much as it feels like the book is begging and beckoning to have it in there, there are so many books that don't have that. And this really, it brings your book into the arts in what I think is a really beautiful way, in a way that sets apart your story. You've included this music, and that's that extra step, that extra care you did by bringing Andrew in, I felt like really set your book apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to speak about Andrew. Andrew Jimenez, he's hard to define, actually. I was going to say he's not an animator at work, but he is technically in story, but he's also an editor. He's a music composer. He's a special effects artist. And I think his superpower is After Effects, which, you know, he knows how to use movement and layers to visually tell a story, you know, and compose. And if you hadn't seen the trailer, I think you probably have seen the Ellie in Concert trailer.
Oh yeah.
He and I collaborated and put that together, but a lot of it is, you know, my direction, but his taking what I kind of visualize as storyboards and then really making it sing. Again, no pun intended, but
and it's hard to it's hard to avoid the puns. I'm not gonna lie.
Coming. But we collaborated with the first one because I had a trailer for the first one.
Right.
And that's when I really kind of saw how I, like, opened my eyes to what books could be, you know. So I'll bounce around a little bit, but I'm going to just, you know, since we're kind of talking about the music right now,
yeah,
and we're talking about Andy, you know, an incredible talent. I knew the book was going to focus on music, that was the theme, and that it basically would be a character and a plot point in a sense, in the story. And you know, your wife was amazing that she really kind of keyed in on that. And you know, most people would just see notes, but she's actually seeing the music.
Yes.
And I think that's really important. She gets a deeper experience to it. And the way that I wanted people to experience the book is, you know, as a book first off, but then to experience the music is a deeper understanding of what I was trying to do. And thus, I have three themes available to stream on my website. And I don't know if you've seen the last one that I put up recently. There's one more that I added. It's called Ellie in Concert Suite. And it's the one that I actually play when I read the book to kids at events. Because if you play that one, it actually has an orchestral warm-up where you hear the violins and everything. And then I have the little tap, tap, tap on the music stand. And then the music begins. And it's a great little pause for the third act of the book when she starts to play with the animals. And not to spoil the ending, but, you know, someone finally gets their peace and quiet. But I play it, and I feel the kids just kind of like, everyone quiets down, and it builds this mood. And all of a sudden, you're brought in into the book on a deeper level than if you were just reading it. Because it's sparse with text, and a lot of it is just, you know, my watercolors, my imagery. But the song, or I'm sorry, the music,
yes,
and it is definitely a character at the end. And it's part of the story.
Yes.
And if you read it and listen to the music like that and watch the trailer, it kind of fills the book in. And really what I try to do, I think part of this is working at Pixar, is that the story, Ellie, the books, the experience goes beyond the book. I want it to live past the book. So there's something tangible in your world that you can bring to it that doesn't just exist in the book.
Yes. Mike, you know, the other thing you're doing when you, this is like, I'm seeing all these like masterful teacher skills that you're demonstrating too, but by engaging the listener in the music before you bring them into the story, you're allowing them to make an even deeper connection with your story because they're not only listening to you in your words, but they're taking in the visuals, the illustrations, as well as listening to the piece. And I gotta say, when that happens with children, the next time they read the book, if they are without the music, they're still going to hear remnants of it in their mind. It's mm-hmm. going to become part of their memory that is affixed to this book. And that, that, as you're saying, as part of a deeper meaning or experience, I think allows us also as readers to even more so put ourselves in Ellie's feet, in Ellie's shoes, the bringing everyone in the zoo together. I love in the beginning of your story, I was talking to you before recording about how I can tell you're an animator. And I've said that to other guests before, but because you create expressions on your characters that I feel like call us to study the expressions. And in some cases, when we're first meeting the other animals in the zoo in this book, and they're all making their different noises, the oo-oos of the monkeys and the grumps of the rhino, the faces you're making, I feel like as I was reading it aloud to children, I was making those faces too, because it just causes you to squish up your face or to open your mouth wide. And that there's just all of these components that tell the story that that you're employing, but then also that a reader can pick up and employ themselves and they're reading it by themselves. And that is, I don't know, there's so much of great storytelling qualities that I can read in you, Mike, just from reading this story.
Well, thank you for the kind words. I mean, I appreciate that you are looking into those details. As an animator, I've been doing it for quite a while. I can't help but to get the characters that I'm drawing to emote a certain way beyond what we're used to. Like, you want to kind of, in a sense, caricature or stylize, because I feel like it's kind of like looking at some of the best caricatures, you know, like a Hirschfeld, and you look at the reason why they're successful is because they're exaggerating that personality, you know? So when you look at it, your mind instantly sees whoever it is that he's caricaturing, you know? You look at it, you're like, oh, that's Bob Hope right away. You know, he's got the jaw and the swoop of the nose and everything. So in a sense, you know, I'm hoping that, you know, I mean, I'm talking about Hirschfeld here. I'm just saying as an example, you know, hoping to kind of glean off some of the heroes in the past to find some fun in exaggerating and putting personality into the characters. And I mean, as an animator, that's what we do. And I try to do that in the watercolor so that, again, a lot of my stories are just more visual. And by pushing expressions and the poses, I hope that helps to tell the story.
Yeah. My favorite, you say the poses, my favorite was Lucy. Lucy the giraffe is the center of our story. That she just wants to sleep, but there's so much noise at the zoo. But every time you show Lucy with Ellie, and she just increasingly slumps herself, her long neck over Ellie. I loved it. It was so adorable to see, again, a character that is able to be exaggerated in that way, that long neck just wrapping over Ellie's round head. That was just funny.
That's great. I makes my heart sing, I guess. Does that make sense?
There you expression? Go. I think you hit the right note with that expression.
just, you know, to hear you kind of notice these little things. I mean, I have the dummy for it here, and it was like that sketch. I wanted to convey there's a drawing in it where Lucy is slumped over her, and I wanted to feel like there's an intimate connection between the two.
Yeah.
And Ellie's trunk is kind of like her hands, and having her swoop over. I mean, did a few sketches for this, and a lot of it turned into composition of like two characters and getting them to interact in a certain way, but have designed so that it reads and an eye direction and how appealing things are. where the negative shapes are and whether there's balance to it all. Like I try to think about all those things, and then when I finally feel like there's a nice balance to it, then you start getting in there and painting it up, but I'm glad again, you have such a keen eye to see these things. I think, when you flip through the book, if you don't spend time looking at it, you might not notice these things. But there's a lot of work and involved in kind of getting the right pose and the right expression. And I'm sure for every picture book maker or every artist, what you see at the end, there's many iterations or at least a lot of thought put into it. It's not just a happy accident.
I think that in a lot of ways, as librarians, we end up seeing books in their best forms because we read them multiple times. I mean, if I read one book to all of one grade level, then I'm reading it, like 4 or 5 times throughout a week. And so then I start to notice it, and then I start to find the rhythm of the book. One of those such rhythms that I find in this book that I love, probably one of my favorite moments in the book, is when Ellie's sort of searching around with how are we going to help Lucy get to sleep, and she comes across, or we come across Betty, who is singing. The bird is singing in this tree, and we just have this moment where you're looking. It said the text says here, Betty Bluebird was singing a lullaby to her babies. That gave Ellie an idea, and on that line, that gave Ellie an idea. You've zoomed in that camera so that Ellie's face takes up half the page, and her eyes are right there level with ours. And I love, for one, studying your watercolor there, because I love the pinks and blues and purples together. But the way that that gives me the opportunity as well to look out to my readers and say, what does your face look like when you have an idea? And they end up mimicking the character. That was something that. The image that always comes to mind when I see people drawing characters, when I see characters drawing out faces in the readers, is that of Disney animators. My cousin in my family, and then her husband, animated for Disney for years, and we used to go to Disney World, and you could take that tour in MGM Studios to see the animators working on different stuff. But you always have famously these historical photos, and also seeing animators work, of mirrors by their desk where they're sketching characters, but they're making these expressions on their own faces, right? That to me is a
Love it.
connection, right? That's a deep connection that I have with illustration in that way. Whenever I think of animation, that is what draws out in my mind. And so that illustration to me is that moment, Mike, where I'm looking at that face and it looks like it's in some way a mirror of me having an idea. And that's the quality that I think in reading it over and over, that page for me took longer to turn the page every time I visited it. It was just, I could feel how much longer the page was sustaining me on that beat. And it was really that's a beautiful page for me, the way you have allowed us to slow down there.
Well, thank you. It's funny, I did make that face when I was drawing
You
it.
did.
And I'm glad that you or hopefully other people make the connection of that idea, that idea of an epiphany. Like, what does an epiphany look like? Is basically what I was trying to illustrate. If I feel like if I'm successful, if I can illustrate a verb or an idea and have it resonate without too much work, where, it's always distilling to simplicity. So if there's too much work or like say text, if there's just too much text, for me, it's successful. We can kind of strip things away. And it feels like you connected with that page, because it just kind of got the note right. Again, no pun intended, but it definitely was something that it's kind of like a bit of a turn for the character, right? So you needed a pause there, and there's a reason why it's a close up. So if I was shooting this or if this was animated, there's no other page where Ellie is that big. And there's a reason, because that's where the reader should pause and look Ellie in the eyes and understand, and understand that she's actually thinking of something. She's coming up with an idea. And that was at least my intent.
Yeah, in fact, almost every other spread, we see Ellie so focused on all of the other people that are around her. I think you get a great sense. Same with the first book, you get a great sense for how much she cares about other people, because she's often looking at and considering other people. But as said, that is one spread where she breaks that, and where it may feel like she's looking out at you, and in some ways she is. She's also looking away from all those other people. Yeah, it was something that really, the word I tend to use a lot, because it is what swells up in me, is that I feel like it's a very affecting page. It causes me to stop and to feel something. And that's where I know that the art is trying to communicate something to me. And those are, again, as a librarian, beautiful moments to stop with children and to say, well, what's going on here? What's going on with you? Where are you in this story?
Mm-hmm.
The other thing I wanted to point out to you, Mike, is later in the book when you have Ellie and Gerard, the gorilla, looking at what I have seen as these different graphic charts of the orchestra. Here's how the orchestra is organized. Here's the strings. Here's the woodwinds. And it's in this illustration with Ellie painting over top of it. She has superimposed the different animals. And I feel mm-hmm. like that is such a fun thing that we can see the different animals in the string section, in the brass section, and mm-hmm. then think about what noises they're making. And would they, in an orchestra, would they, how would these things sound? There's thoughts like that where you never were beating over the head to the reader, like, let's talk about music now and let me give you a music lesson and here's how all this works. But rather, you give these simple nods for, you know, your readers that are in third and fourth and fifth grade. They're right now learning about the orchestra and they're learning about that. And the children that are younger than that are learning in music class about this. So there's just these subtle things that they can draw on and say, I remember seeing that in music class, or I've seen that somewhere else.
Exactly. I credit you for, again, your insight on that. That page was basically a map of an orchestra. There was actually a split in the middle. I don't know if there's still one in the final page, but there's actually a bit of a split versus it kind of could look like a rainbow. And there was a point where I was going to, like, maybe diagram it or put a little instrument noise or note to each animal, but I felt I tried it and it looked like to your point, a little heavy-handed, and I wanted it just to be there. And it's like, if you understand on a visual level what I'm going for, that's great, and if you don't understand, it still works.
Yeah, I mean, it even works to the degree of you have four different colors, so whether or not you know about the orchestra being broken into sections, mm-hmm. You can read that, oh, these two animals are part of the same color, so their sounds must be similar. There's things mm-hmm. that a child can read in that illustration mm-hmm. that, again, I can tell it's very evident the thought and care you put in this book. And I just want you to know that I've gotten to live with this book for a little while and had the greatest experiences because I got to bring it in front of children, and as did my wife. And you just made something really beautiful, Mike. I'm really grateful that it's out in the world.
Well, thank you, Matthew. Thank you for your support and interest in discussing Ellie and your insight on the musical aspect of it, because it could have just been a cute elephant book. But I did try to make it more about music. Again, I think I'm repeating myself, but let me just explain that part of why Ellie exists is to bring art, if it will, you know, may it be visual or music or theater or sculptural, and bring it to a conversation for kids, because I feel like there's just a lot less emphasis on the arts now than when I was a kid. And I wanted a way to talk to kids about it and bring the fun back into it, and just so that they know that it's not just something that they're kind of playing around with and in coloring sheets or whatnot, but there's an importance to it in culture, right? And there's importance to it in people's lives, and it gives meaning, and it's fulfilling in your life if you make room for it.
I agree. Mike, I feel like I've been asking you about all these different spots here and there in your book, but I wonder, is there something that we didn't talk about tonight that you want to make sure that your readers notice about your book, or just something about the story that you want to share before we wrap up our time?
Well, again, Ellie, I think there's a little bit of Ellie in all of us, at least I hope, that, you know, I think, or I feel, people often get lost as they grow up.
Yeah.
And they try to find direction, they try to find their place in this world and in their life. And for me, Ellie is kind of my conduit to speak to not just kids, but to anyone that may pick her up and, you know, see her big doe eyes and, you know, get caught up flipping through it, that she kind of speaks to all of us that we matter and that art matters and we can all make a difference and we can all express ourselves.
Yeah.
And even when things aren't going great in our lives or even in the world, obviously, with things happening, that there's always this bright spot. There's this place that you can go to and you can, in a sense, escape to. And it's your place and it's your art. And no one can take that away from you. And how important that is in life, and that it matters.
No doubt. I see it. I can see it in just the gentleness of this character. Knowing that that's your voice there. That's beautiful. Do you have future plans for Ellie? Are there opportunities for her to do more things? I mean, I don't know that anything official needs to be announced anywhere, but just that you see other stories for her maybe?
Yeah, definitely.
That's awesome.
Like I said, you know, we're going to hopefully do more. We're going to do some more books.
I mean, the fact that you're so focused on the arts, Mike, coming from a person that is, I'm not in the performing arts. My wife is, though. And knowing that there are programs across the country that get cut, there's funding that gets lost, and yet here you are reminding both readers that are young and also readers that are older about reminding us of those feelings of what it means to create art. That's an important role, I think, that your stories are carrying. And so, yeah, I'm glad that that's something you want to keep exploring. That's exciting.
I think so. I mean, just keep and keeping it charming and fun and and hopefully within the stories, you know, there's, you know, I can dig into some deeper themes. I think the thing that sets us apart, people in general, is that we can express ourselves artistically.
Yes.
Say from the rest of the animal kingdom, even say it on a biological level, you know, there's obviously different levels of intellect, but the arts and how we express ourselves through dance, music, and visual arts, that's the one thing that I think humans have that we shouldn't be lost over everything else that is evolving now, that, you know, there's so much changing in our world, right, technologically and everything, that just needs to be embraced and honored at this point.
I fully agree with that. I'm glad that that's where your heart is too. That's Mike, it's so awesome. You're out there in front of our children saying these things. I love it. Okay, I'm gonna wrap up with our kids. We've been talking about them a lot on the way, but just to give you a final word, well, I want to say Thank you. This was great talking to you. I really enjoyed getting to know this warm, loving soul behind Ellie. I had no doubt that this is the person you would be, but it sure was a pleasure meeting you, Mike.
It was a pleasure speaking with you. Just doing this podcast has been a blast, and thanks for spending the time just to talk about Ellie and all the things that, you know, we discussed today. I think it's important, and I'm glad that we're able to share with more people. So thank you again, Matthew.
Yeah, me too. Well, so here this is. Final words, Mike. I'm going to see a library full of children tomorrow morning. Is there a message that I can bring to them from you?
Well, like I say to all the kids, I hope that Ellie inspires you to make art and create something wonderful in your life.
Coming up on the podcast, Hannah Barnaby shares Bad Guy, as well as Garcia and Colette go exploring. Two brand new picture books, each with their own story to tell. And until then, please enjoy Ellie in concert. We know you value what you put in front of your kids, especially when it comes to screens and podcasts. That's why we're excited to share a new podcast from our friends at Sleepiest, creating bedtime stories to help your kids fall asleep fast.
Hello, Abby here. If you've got children and find bedtime's a struggle, I'd like to tell you about Coco Sleep, a children's story podcast designed to make bedtime a dream. Coco Sleep turns a chaotic bedtime into cozy bonding time. The stories are delivered in a pace that gently slows. Rumour has it that no one's ever heard an ending. So search Coco Sleep on your favorite podcast app and let's make bedtime a dream. That's K-O-K-O Sleep, and I'll see you there.